We'll open this prayer discussion with prayer. Father, I would not think only of myself or pray only for myself, as now I seek thy presence. I would remember before thee all my brothers and sisters who need thy help. Especially I think of those who are faced by great temptation, of those who are faced by tasks too great for their powers, of those who stand in any valley of decision, of those who are in debt or poverty, of those who are suffering the consequences of misdeeds long ago repented of those who, by reason of early surroundings, have never had a fair chance in life, of all family circles broken by death, of all missionaries of the kingdom of heaven in faraway corners of the earth, of those who lift high the lamp of truth in lonely places. Dear Father of mankind, make me the human channel so far as in me lies, through which thy divine love and pity may reach the hearts and lives of a few of those who are near me now. Amen. It seems, I know it's sort of presumptuous and almost, I think, to probably for me to talk to you about prayer. Most of you probably know much more about it than I, and are much, quite, probably far better prayer warriors than I. But, I'm a scientist. Some people refer me as the sort of the biological scientist in residence here now for a few weeks. But I haven't gotten around to that yet. Maybe next week. But I think this is a very important subject, and I wanted the chief, because of some experiences she's had, to get going in a prayer group. And there are many of you who also have been involved in this, and I want you to get involved in this thing. And the reason I think it's important is the subject of all of this now, as I unravel my scroll. What I've done, I collect up material on this, and I've sort of glued it all together this morning. Gene Swihart helped me, and we found some scotch tape, and we glued it all together. Now, I hope it makes some kind of a story, but a true one. It seems to me at least sometimes, that the forgotten man in society today is the inner man. Action seems to be the order of the day. One crisis after another claims our attention, commands our energies, and demands our response. Quiet times and seasons of reflection seem, if not treasonable, at least sort of people who do this manifest disinterest or slothfulness in time of crisis, in this crisis-ridden world. In other words, you kind of look down on these people. I feel one of the great condemnations of our society today is that we have so little privacy, and most people haven't even missed it. I think a summer ago, I led a discussion in privacy. We had a very interesting time about this. We seem more and more to be living from the outside rather than from the inside. A big issue today is the quality of life. But what kind of quality of life are we talking about? It's the ecology that of the outside, the quality of our environment. When ecos is really means house, you know, and I'd be more concerned about what's inside the house. I believe a real proof of this statement is our own uneasiness with prayer. In many churches today, our commitment to prayer is only really only half-hearted. And it's kind of a hit-and-miss proposition. And I talked with our Holden hero number one about this last night. And I told him what I was going to do today. And he said that, he says, even here at Holden, we get so busy with things and we neglect our prayer life sometimes. It seems that our age, our own age here, has sort of outgrown prayer. We don't pray for the four examinations anymore. We study for them, or we figure out some way to cheat. We don't pray for rain. We seed the clouds. We don't pray for sleep. We go to the medicine cabinet. When a member of the family is ill, we do not indulge in incantations. We try to call up the best physician we can find and hope he'll give us the latest miracle drug. When there's trouble involving a sort of friction between people and personalities, say in the office, we don't think about praying. We organize sensitivity groups. We don't pray for peace anymore. We send Henry Kissinger. And that's how we go, you know. Our church bodies have constructed fantastic edifices. They've built bulging bureaucracies. They've accumulated considerable wealth in some places. They've mastered many techniques and accumulated a rather impressive amount of brain power. And they've published many position papers. But sometimes with all of this, there seems to be so little accomplished that I am moved to say, never did so many labor with so much for so little. And I've diagnosed at least part of the problem in many quarters as this. And Jesus said, without me you can do nothing. Or as Paul said in Timothy, we have a form of godliness, but we deny the power thereof. We suffer from the sterility of abandoned prayer. Or if we pray, we too often forget the prayer of joy. And it's a little incident. I think I mentioned it at our banquet in Minneapolis that we had such a good time at in January. And the occasion here, what was it that I'm going to tell you about, it happened in a church. It was during prayers, and there was a small child who was turning around and smiling at everyone in church. He wasn't really tearing up any hymn books, going through his mother's purse. He wasn't even picking his nose or kicking or spitting. He wasn't even humming or gurgling. He was just smiling. Finally, his mother jerked him around in a stage whisper that you could have heard way outside. She said, stop that grinning. You're in church. And with that, she gave him a belt on his beehiver, and tears rolled down his cheeks, and he kind of sat there still crying, and she said, that's better, and returned to her prayers. Now, what must this little child think of our age in our church? We sing, make a joyful noise unto the Lord, but then the look on our faces suggests that our rich aunt has just died and left everything to her pregnant cat instead of our favorite charity, which is ourselves. Our first response should be, we have to get this mother and child to Holden where we can tell them about our God, the happy God, the God who had to have a sense of humor to create the likes of us, a God who understands little children who pick their noses in church because they're bored, or even understands our shallow prayers when we implore, if you can't make me thin, Lord, at least make my friends look fat. Well, I thought at this point we should look and see what the Bible has to say about it. It's a good source that we sometimes neglect too. And I've deduced that there are two general truths about prayer. The first is that it was a very vital part of Jesus' life. And the second is that he intended it to be a vital part of ours. Two pretty simple truths. I cheer the movement to change the age-old image of a benign Jesus with a Mona Lisa smile. Now he's cast as a revolutionary, applying power tactics, setting up confrontations, and crusading against the establishment. This image remaking is also wrong if we do not recognize that from first to last, Jesus was a man of prayer. Not an atypical day for him was one in Capernaum. He taught in the synagogue, he cast out demons. He went from there to a house and he healed Peter's mother-in-law. That evening after sundown, the whole town turned out with their afflicted people and it filled up the whole place. He couldn't get in. And after all this, he got up very early the next morning and he went out to a very lonely spot. I'm sure on the way he watched some birds. And he remained there to pray. He prayed for children. He prayed before he worked miracles, before he chose his disciples. He prayed in the garden. He prayed on the cross. The disciples asked him, "Teach us to pray." Now, I think they must have been really impressed with his prayer life. I couldn't find anywhere in the Bible, and maybe it's there, but the disciples didn't say to Jesus, "Teach us how to teach, teach us how to pray, or teach us how to work miracles." But they did say, "Teach us how to pray." And Jesus wanted us to talk with God as he did. He said we should go into the closet, into seclusion and concentration, that we must concentrate on our prayers. At this point, I'm reminded what an old tent pastor told us one time. In telling us the importance of prayer and concentrating on what we're saying, and he told about an old preacher he knew who was teaching these sort of backwoodsy people about prayer, and he had taught them the Lord's Prayer. And then as a challenge to one of the old fellows there, he says, "I'll tell you what I'll do. If you can say the Lord's Prayer clear through," he says, "I'll give you a horse, a riding horse." And so the fellow was delighted at this because he had memorized this prayer then. And he started in, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Will you give me the saddle too?" And that's how we do it sometimes, you know. He said prayer was a matter of quality, not quantity. He said we shouldn't become involved in vain repetitions, in babblings like the heathen. The true object of Christian prayer is not that God's will may be changed, but that his will may be done. Prayer was not meant to be a burden to us, but a privilege in which we richly share. Some other aspects of prayer I've made notes on here. Our prayers are too often, "Hear, Lord, for thy servant speaketh," instead of "Speak, Lord, thy servant heareth." We too often give the message and then hang up the phone. And Carol has so appropriately reminded us of one of our great tragedies, and it is this, that most men and women expect so little of God. And what I'm saying today reflects a lot of what Wes said this morning, for those of you who were at Matin. And the Bible verse he said really fits in here. That we shouldn't be afraid to ask. Pray not to change other people's lives, but your own first. Prayer must be a practice in honesty. Let your fortresses crumble and stand free. And don't be afraid, you know, to bother God with details. And in this regard, I want to read you something that I'm giving Mary. Mary's my chief theological consultant from the standpoint of which books we should read, and now and then I try to find her a good one. And this one is very meaningful for her because John Bailey was a friend of her father's. And John Bailey has done some very interesting things. I'm going to mention something later too. But in his little devotional booklet here, there's one thing on to pray and not to faint. And he says, is there someone who altogether fails to face his lot with an equal mind? Are you near to fainting, near to losing heart? Are you overborne with labor, or worn out with worry, or consumed with hopeless longing? Then won't you take your Lord's advice? Don't try to keep the whole thing pent up within your own heart. Share it with God. Tell him all about it, yes, down to the last and absurdest annoying detail. And then he quotes a Bible verse, in nothing be anxious, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known unto God. And he spake a parable unto them to this end, that men ought always to pray and not to faint, or not to lose heart. You must pray and not lose heart. In fact, that's the Bible verse for this particular talk that he gave, that you pray and not lose heart. You must enjoy being yourself, not wishing you were someone else or praying that you could be someone else, but to be yourself. And I was impressed with what Paul said in 1 Timothy. He speaks there of four aspects of prayer open to the believer. It goes like this. First of all, then, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgiving be made for all men. And so I want to just take those four briefly and discuss them a bit. Supplication to me means literally begging. It's a petition of the sinner for forgiveness. I believe we have an example of this in Matthew 15, when that poor Canaanite woman begs Jesus that he will heal her daughter. And the disciples are trying to, you know, close the gate on her. They're trying to get her out of there because she's bothering things. She's making a lot of noise. And also Jesus, we're almost shook up the way Jesus sort of puts her off. He says some almost really unkind things to her, but she hangs in there. And then he says, great is your faith. Be it done to you as you desire. And it was. For her daughter was healed instantly. The second one, he just says it's a prayer. What is called a prayer here, I interpret as a prayer of confidence by obedient children of God. It is a claim to the promises of God. It is the right and duty of every child of God. The third one that's spoken of in this verse is intercession. It is the third form of prayer and the highest form of prayer for others. It's the prayer of one who is willing to take the place of the one for whom he is praying. It is a plea for the cause of another, as if it were his own or her own. There's a great example of this in the Old Testament when Moses prays for forgiveness for the sins of his people. He's praying earnestly for them, and then to really make the point with God, he makes this very significant statement. You know what, God, if you don't forgive these people, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book. He was willing to take their place if they could be spared. Paul did this too in praying that his people would accept Christ. I could wish myself were accursed before Christ for my brethren, my kinsmen, according to the flesh. The perfect example, of course, is Christ himself. He really did take the place of those for whom he prayed. God could not forgive the Israelites by blotting Moses really out. Writing him out of the book sort of thing. Nor could he convert Paul's Jewish friends by separating Paul from Christ. I mean, this was really impossible to do. But God can forgive all sinners because Jesus not only prayed for them, he died for them. By intercessory prayer, we may be able to obtain for others what they cannot obtain for themselves. I know in my own case, I owe much in my life to the intercessory prayer of others, many who I don't even know about. And I guess that's the beautiful thing about it. The fourth prayer, or supplication, or type of prayer here, is the one of giving thanks. And that's one we often ignore. When Jesus prayed for the raising of Lazarus, it's a very interesting dissertation there, or the description. Because before he ever tells Lazarus, you know, to get up, you know the prayer he's already said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. And then he asks Lazarus to get up. And it's only with the prayer that healing really takes place. Remember, I think it was the 10 lepers, wasn't it? And 9 went away. Their leprosy was removed. But one came back and gave thanks. And that was the only one that was really healed. And then there's a discipline in prayer, I think. Discipline is based on a realization that nothing that I know works on a hit or miss fashion. Prayer is too important a force to ignore or just to take hit and miss. And I know of no one who became proficient in anything without diligent effort. And I think that we often pray amiss. And I thought here I'd give you, you know, in my own experience, what I try to do, and, you know, I goof up a lot. But the first thing in the morning, you know, when my feet hit the deck, and I'll admit, I'm type A guy. I wake up and I'm pretty alert in the morning, relatively speaking. But, you know, I'm done in at night. And so for me, this is easy. And as soon as my feet hit the deck, I thank God for the day, and then I pray, help me to live it in a meaningful way, in a manner pleasing in thy sight. And then I use Bailey, the prayer which I modified to open our discussion here. And John Bailey, the same one I read from a few moments ago, he wrote this diary of private prayer, and it's a prayer for every morning and every evening throughout the month. And it's very helpful to me, and then you have free prayer along with it, you see. And I'm going to leave one of these in the library for those of you who are not familiar with it, and you can become familiar with it. And from James Finn, they only cost about 40 cents. So you can buy two, and when one wears out, you've got another one in reserve. Now, as I say, this isn't for everyone. And I got Chief's permission to say a few things here about her. When she gets up in the morning wants to get up when I have breakfast, I try to discourage this. But now and then she comes out and she turns one element on and puts the water on the other one. And one day, I usually have this instant carnation breakfast, you know, and I mix it with milk, stirred up, you know. And boy, you don't know what this is till somebody puts lemon juice in it, you know. Boy, I never tried that. Now, maybe the chief has discovered something great here. She didn't really mean to. And maybe it is really great, but I don't really go for it. So I just, you know, I don't really recommend this for the chief early in the morning, because I wouldn't be too sure, but it might even be unintelligible to God. And then I try to have a short devotion in the morning by myself. The children have all gone now, and there's very little doing around my house at 5:30 and 6 in the morning. And then I keep a prayer list, which I told you about some of you the other day. And you keep adding names to this, and it gets pretty long. And then I've been impressed with the Bible verse that says, you know, pray without ceasing. And for a long time, this thing bothered me. You know, you can't get much done if you spend the whole day praying. Although, I will say, one of my buttons today is, in your heart, you know he's right. And it's Luther, the picture of Luther. And he was right. He was wrong about a lot of things, but he was right about prayer, you know. When, as he got busier, he said, boy, when I really got busy, sometimes I'd have to spend half a day praying. You know. And but this prayer without ceasing, how I interpret that is, you know, like, all right, so you write a letter, you know, and you're praying that this letter may be meaningful to the person you're writing to, and as you drop it in the box, you know, that it may be meaningful. Or in my life, with a lot of, you got to meet a lot of people and talk to them. People coming in, they always got problems, and before all of these, you pray for this. Or if you're driving along, you go by a school, you know, you pray for these teachers. Most people run teachers down. Maybe we should think about lifting them up. Or you go by a church, you know, everybody's teeing off on the pastor. That are maybe we ought to be praying for the pastor. As you drive through a tenement area, these people for whom, you know, life is just really a rotten kind of a thing for them. We ought to be praying for them. And this is sort of this prayer without ceasing. You know, you don't have to stop and face Mecca or something and get out the prayer rug. You know, you can, this is how you do it. And on my way home in the evening, well, on the way to work in the morning, I go the long way around, and I'm very fortunate, and I can go 9 miles to work by the back road and maybe meet 1 to 3 cars and trucks. But on the way home, I'm usually late, so I take the short way home, and I really should take the long way home, because on the way home, what I try to do, it takes me 9 minutes, and I try to make those 9 minutes sort of a confession. But it isn't long enough, because, you know, I look at all the things I goofed up that day, and all the things I, you know, the people I wronged, and but it's helpful in this confession to do this, and maybe I should move out of town further, but do something. And the other thing about it, or I mentioned one of the things that happens here, you know, you say, well, it isn't up, you know, you drive by these places and pray for them. Or like you drive by the convalescent home and say, boy, you know, there's some lonely people in there. You know, comfort them. That isn't enough, you know. And after you find out that you start praying for these people, pretty soon you're going in there and visiting them. You know, you really find out what's going on. And that's a remarkable thing about prayer. And then at night, I know some of you probably are like me, something bugging you and you wake up in the middle of the night, or they're noisy up here in the jacuzzi pool and they wake you up, you know, somebody's having a hilarious time and you're not in on it and you're got late to bed and you got to get up early in the morning. Well, that's the time to get out your prayer list and see. You don't have to get out the list, you know, you have to go lay there and see if you can, how many of them you can go through. And that's a nice way to go to sleep. Praying for these people who need help. It's better than the medicine cabinet, really. And then now a little word about Holden. Now I remember talking to Wes Preeb, you know, you think of how we got this place. I'm sure there's some praying involved there. We still can't believe how we got it, you know. It is truly a miracle. And old Wes told me that he hadn't been up here. You know, he tried to get the place, and he got it. And then he came up here with a bunch. He was sitting down there by number one, kind of looking over the place, and I'm sure he was probably as surprised as everybody else. And one pastor told him, he says, boy, you really got a white elephant here. There's nobody going to come here. There's no swimming pool. The youth, there's not going to be attraction to the youth here. You know, going through it. And we may well ask at this point, why has this place been such a help to so many? Why have so many lives been changed by having been here? Why is it such an exciting place where there's so much forgiving love and joy? Some of you say, may well, you know, they say, in telling about this place, well, you know, it's so beautiful, the setting's so wonderful, and the food is so great, you know, it keeps consistently, you know, it's really impressive. Or those of you like to fish, boy, there, you know, there's really a lot of great places to go to fish. And the people that come here are so fine. The faculty is outstanding, you know. The director and his wife are so brilliant. Facilities are pretty impressive, you know, and you total up the list. But I can go through all of these and say, well, I can name that place, you know, they got a, that's a great place too. It's pretty and everything. And the food is good there. And boy, there's some remarkable faculty there. Maybe it's true that, you know, the whole combination here. But I submit to you that in great part, the success of this place, if you call it success, is really prayer. Every day there's prayer here. There's intercessory prayer. There's all kinds of these prayers. Every day, not only in the summer, but Werner in the winter and the groups here, they lead the prayer here. But it's not only here. It's throughout the United States and Canada. People are praying for this place in support of the director and Werner and all the people here. There's people who are continually in prayer for this place. And not only in Canada and the United States, but I know even into Juvik, Norway, huh? Where the Andreessens are. I know they're praying for this place. And I know that every Sunday morning, old Wilhelm gets out there and he plays the record on Holden Sounds and thinks and prays about this place. Huh? Pardon? And sings a song, that's right. Yeah, and he sings, a very good singer. Huh? And now the Great Dane will be leaving. And she'll be praying in Schopenhagen, you know, or Copenhagen. You'll be praying there for this place, and that this will continue to be a leaven and not become a lump, huh? As Paul Fanning says. And Paul prays for us a Presbyterian prayer in Los Angeles or Santa Monica. And they're especially good prayers. Now, I've probably gone on long enough, and I'm going to conclude. I'm really, Rich got to me this morning. He spoke about a shepherd, and that's really what I am. I started out my scientific career. I was the first sheep herder that General Electric ever hired. And they don't have any more now. I don't know if that tells you something, but it's a great profession. But I come off from a farm, and so I like to tell simple stories. Make a point. And I think that's where I am here. I got some other stories, but before I give you this last story, what's going to happen now is that the chief and Werner are going to have a book review kind of a thing, and the Joneses, they didn't say yes, but I suggested that they also help, because they've had some real experiences with this down at the Dalles. It's a book called Prayer Can Change Your Life by Parker and St. John, and it's well if you read the first introduction in the first two or three chapters, and you can borrow the chief's before. Can they borrow yours, Chief, before this afternoon, or do you have to?
I'm sorry.
Oh, you haven't. All right. She's got to work on it some more. So she's got her afternoon cut off. But we put a book in there. It's one in the library. I can put the book I'm going to give to Mary. I'll put it in there if you want to read that. He's got something on prayer in here. And I'm going to leave Bailey in there. And I also have, it's a very good book, I think, or an interesting one. I thought I had it here. Oh, yes, which I'll also leave here in the library, by C.S. Lewis, Letters to Malcolm, Chiefly on Prayer. So as you probably figured out, we're pushing prayer. And so at every 4 o'clock, now, if the group is too big, we may wish to decide, and maybe the Joneses want to take a group, and the chief, but Werner's going to be in and out, and he'd like to work with chief on it. Maybe some of the rest of you will want to take these groups, and then for you'll be reviewing them, mainly this book. And for those of you who are afraid now, you're not going to get into this group, and they're going to make you get up and say a prayer for some of you, you know. Don't worry about that. So come and find out and see the remarkable things that in the experiences of these people. And I look forward to being to some of them, but this is for the chief, it's her show. And I'm going to erase my name from that thing up on the board there. Now for my...
Mail.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes. Well, the company treasurer says the books are for sale. I apologize. You know, I get so mad at these people that put out hardback books. Because I like to give books away. And the Jamestown doesn't have this in paperback. So it costs over $5. But I think it's $5 well spent. Is there anything more I should say, Chief, or Werner, or anybody else on the prayer thing this afternoon? It's at 4 o'clock right here, is it? Right? Okay. And a homely little story. I identify at this point with a freckled-faced, poorly dressed, barefoot boy who was one day standing on the banks of the Mississippi River. He had, old beaten-up clothes on and a crummy old hat. And his eyes seemed to be fixed upriver. And he was looking for a certain riverboat. And it came into view, and as soon as it came into view, he took off his tattered old hat and he started to wave it, like he was trying to wave it into shore, which looked kind of ridiculous, really. And he didn't know it, but it was a stranger standing behind him. And he couldn't stand any longer, and he says, "You know, young fellow, you're crazy if you think that boat's coming in here to pick you up." And just as he'd said that, the boat veered sharply, came right into shore where the little boy was standing. And he just hopped on the boat and put his tattered hat back on his head, and the boat pulled out, and he looked back to the stranger and said over the rail, he says, "Mister, I'm not crazy." He says, "My dad is the captain of this boat." And that's what I have to say about prayer today. And I keep adding, you see, I can add to both ends of this and cut it in the middle.